Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to New Yorker magazine editor-in-chief David Remnick, who also takes a few more questions backstage exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Even as he tries to refocus on trade policy, Donald Trump's presidency has been rocked this week by escalating scandals related to everything from Russian meddling to porn stars. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. On top of everything else going on right now, President Trump, of course, is being sued by porn star Stormy Daniels over a reported hush payment Trump's lawyer made to her just weeks before the election to hide an alleged affair. The Trump White House has insisted that the accusations are false, but last night we found out more about the lengths to which Trump's lawyer has gone to silence Daniels.
NBC News has learned that in late February, the president's lawyer, Michael Cohen, secretly obtained a temporary restraining order against Daniels. The order, issued by a private arbiter, bars Daniels from disclosing confidential information related to what her lawyer calls a hush agreement, designed to keep Daniels quiet about the intimate relationship she's alleged to have had with Mr. Trump.
That's right. The president of the United States got a restraining order against a porn star. Which means we have to say goodbye to the old lowest point in American history. Goodbye, Garth Brooks rock and roll alter ego Chris Gaines. We hardly knew ya. And while that story is developing, Trump is also dealing with the fallout from the ongoing Russian probe, which, not for nothing, isn't a bad porn title. Now, there's a lot that we don't know about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of Trump's ties to Russia, but one thing we do know is that Trump has been acting super guilty. Trump has tried to fire or coerce almost everyone involved in the Russia investigation and refuses to impose sanctions on Russia. And yesterday, we got yet another report about Trump's suspicious behavior against the advice of his lawyers. Trump has been talking to witnesses in the investigation to find out what they've been saying, and Robert Mueller found out about it.
The special counsel has learned of two conversations in recent months in which President Trump asked key witnesses about matters they discussed with investigators.
He asked witnesses about their conversations with investigators. Trump looks so guilty at this point, even pictures of him have shifty, haunted mansion eyes. Now, as you might recall, the New York Times reported in January that Trump had ordered his White House counsel, Don McGahn, to fire Mueller, which McGahn refused to do. Now, according to this new reporting, the president told an aide that McGahn should issue a statement denying the New York Times article in January, but McGahn did not publicly deny the article. So just to recap, Trump told McGahn to fire Mueller, but McGahn refused, which got out. So Trump told McGahn to deny that he told him to fire Mueller, which McGahn again refused, which then also got out. Seriously, how are these two still together? Trump tells McGahn to do stuff. McGahn says no. It keeps getting in the press, but Trump doesn't fire McGahn, and McGahn doesn't quit. They're like one of those couples that ruins every dinner party by fighting, and when they leave, someone says, they must have amazing sex. Meanwhile, we keep getting more information about the Trump team's ties to Russia and specifically their efforts after the election to set up a secret communications channel with the Kremlin. Apparently, Mueller is now homing in on Eric Prince, founder of the mercenary company Blackwater and an advisor to Trump's transition team. Specifically, Mueller is now looking at a secret meeting Prince held with a Kremlin emissary on a remote island shortly after the election.
Robert Mueller has, quote, gathered evidence that a secret meeting in the Seychelles just before the inauguration of Donald Trump was an effort to establish a back channel between the incoming administration and the Kremlin. Eric Prince, the founder of the private military company Blackwater, met with a Russian official close to President Vladimir Putin. A witness cooperating with Mueller has told investigators the meeting was set up in advance so that a representative of the Trump transition could meet with an emissary from Moscow to discuss future relations between the two countries.
Wait. You're telling me a secret meeting on a remote island in the Indian Ocean between a mercenary and an agent of the Kremlin turned out to be suspicious? Where was the meeting? Inside a volcano the shape of a skull? We'll get down to business shortly, gentlemen, but first, enjoy your zebra steaks. Orphans, serve us. Now, the meeting is of special interest to Mueller, apparently, because Prince has lied about it. He later told investigators the meeting was an unplanned encounter that came about by chance because he happened to be at a luxury hotel in the Indian Ocean island nation with officials from the United Arab Emirates. That's right, he tried to pass it off as a chance encounter. I swear, I just happened to be vacationing on a remote island when I ran into a close friend of Vladimir Putin's, and silly me, I got a paper cut on my hand, and before you know it, we were swearing a blood oath and chanting Hail Hydra. It was just like one of those sandals commercials. And by the way, this isn't even the first time the Trump team has tried to set up a secret back channel with the Kremlin, which, not for nothing, isn't a bad porn title. Because last year, as you may recall, the Washington Post broke this story about the president's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner.
Jared Kushner and Russia's ambassador to Washington discussed the possibility of setting up a secret and secure communications channel between Trump's transition team and the Kremlin.
That's right. Jared Kushner tried to set up a secret communications channel between the White House and the Kremlin, but unfortunately, he couldn't find a string long enough to reach Moscow. Now, we don't know exactly what came of all these attempts to set up a secret back channel, but earlier this week, we learned more about what exactly the Kremlin may have wanted from the Trump team when The New Yorker published a blockbuster story about ex-British spy Christopher Steele. He's the guy who wrote that infamous dossier about Trump's alleged ties to Russia, the one that contained those salacious rumors about Trump. Now, I can't tell you about those rumors because they are unverified, but I don't need to because, as we've documented on this show before, Trump wingman and Fox News host Sean Hannity is all too happy, for some reason, to repeat the details of this embarrassing allegation over and over again on his show. And with the Steele dossier back in the news, Trump supporter Sean Hannity is at it again.
Remember, that's the dossier that talked about Trump at a Ritz-Carlton in Moscow with two prostitutes urinating on his bed? The fake document about President Trump, and that goes to the Ritz-Carlton, and that goes to hookers. That phony dossier quoting Russians and the Ritz-Carlton and hookers, that was about the Ritz-Carlton and hookers. You know, talking about hookers and urinating in beds. Hookers, Ritz-Carlton, urinating on a bed. Russian, hookers, 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 urinating in his bed. Peeing, urinating, urinating, urinating on beds. Wow. Do you laugh at the hookers in the Brits in Moscow? Is that the funny part?
No. The funny part is that you keep telling us about it. The only way you could do more to advertise this story is if you took out three billboards. Now, this allegation was actually back in the news this week thanks to ex-Trump campaign aide Sam Nunberg, who you may recall had a meltdown on cable news when he was called to appear before a grand jury by Mueller. Nunberg mentioned that Mueller was interested in Trump's trip to Moscow in 2013 for the Miss Universe pageant. Nunberg admitted that a Russian associate offered to send women up to Trump's hotel room, but insisted that, according to Trump's longtime bodyguard, Keith Schiller, Trump had rejected the offer.
I was told that idiot Eamon had offered to send women up to Trump's room. But Trump didn't want it.
When you say I was told that the Russians offered to send women to Trump's room and he didn't want it,
No, I was told that Eamon offered to send women up there and Trump flat out refused it. And Trump did flat out refuse it. And I can tell you that Trump is too smart to have women come up to his room.
You think Donald Trump is too smart to have women come up to his room? He's not even too smart to not take a picture with them.
Okay, got that camera ready? Everybody say Exhibit A.
Okay, but still. Let's give Trump the benefit of the doubt. He might be an idiot, but even he is too smart to ever have women up to his hotel room, right?
In an interview published tonight by The Daily Beast, adult film star Alana Evans says she spoke with Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels. She tells me, all I'm going to say is I ended up with Donald in his hotel room. Picture him chasing me around his hotel room in his tighty whities.
No! I don't want to picture that. But seriously, while it's a terrifying thought to picture Trump chasing you in his tighty whities, the only way he'd ever catch you is if you broke both ankles. Oh, no!
Come here.
Wait, are you chasing me?
I'm gonna get you.
I have to be honest, you're moving so slowly, I can't tell if you're even getting closer. Okay, now that was all from the first Steele dossier, but The New Yorker reported this week that Steele actually wrote a second dossier about the Trump transition team's communications with Russia after the election, specifically about an alleged attempt by the Kremlin to block one of Trump's possible picks for Secretary of State.
Steele wrote another memo back in November 2016 in which a senior Russian official relayed talks circulating in the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs the Kremlin had intervened to block Trump's initial choice of Secretary of State Mitt Romney. That the Kremlin, through unspecified channels, had asked Trump to appoint someone who would be prepared to lift Ukraine-related sanctions.
That's right. The Russians allegedly intervened to block Mitt Romney from being Secretary of State, which is a bummer for Romney because he still had to have dinner with Donald Trump. Look at Romney's face. That face is the physical manifestation of this sound. So Trump is swinging wildly on policy. He's being sued by a porn star, and investigators are homing in on his ties to the Kremlin. And even his biggest supporters seem to be mostly interested in
peeing, urinating hookers.
Which, not for nothing, isn't a bad porn title. This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is the editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Radio Hour, a national radio program and podcast. Please welcome back to the show, David Remnick. I'm so happy you were here. It feels like every time you're here, you used to live in Russia, you reported in Russia, you wrote a book about Russia, we are talking about Russia. So should we just get right into it?
Can we say urine as many times as humanly possible?
I feel like we've hit our quota for today. You guys just published a wonderful piece by Jane Mayer about Christopher Steele, who put the dossier together, the dossier that obviously we've been talking about. How long, it's such an incredible piece and very gripping to read. How long does someone like Jane work on a piece like that?
Oh, months and months. And that's the virtue of The New Yorkers, that people are unleashed to go do their research for 6 months sometimes, sometimes even a year. And what she found is that this guy, who's under very heavy attack, particularly from the Republican Party, people in the Congress and elsewhere, is an honest intelligence officer who's been worked for MI6, which was foreign intelligence in Great Britain. He worked in Moscow for 3 years on the ground. And now he's in private business. And he was hired first by a Republican entity, and then it switched over to the Democrats. So this was nobody is claiming that this dossier is 100% true. It may even be, Seth, that scene in the hotel room that Sean Hannity is
obsessed with
more than one or two times. Who knows? And he does not present it as absolutely solid, but is raw intelligence that is proving each month to be more and more reliable as the facts accumulate.
As someone who spent as much time in Russia as you did, and I know you were there for the fall of communism, and so there was this dawn of maybe this was going to be a different thing.
It's going to be democracy. It's going to be fantastic.
But yet you kind of saw how quickly that wasn't going to work. Are you surprised by any of this, or is this whole story about Russian meddling very in line with what you've
Well, about democracy itself falling apart all over the world, including right here.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly cheerful story.
Yeah.
I mean, in 1989 through 1991, democracy was on the march in Russia. Even in China, there was Tiananmen Square, you remember. And throughout the world, there were growing democracies. Now we are in this moment of authoritarian populism, even, in my mind, most remarkably, in the United States of America. So it's a very serious moment in global history. Am I surprised about what's going on between the Russia and the United States? Not at all. Because think of Vladimir Putin as a guy who's playing global poker, and he's got two threes in his hand. But he's playing the hand magnificently well. He's
right.
thrown the United States off kilter.
Right, and
he's
then Trump Western has, Europe. Like, two Uno cards and, like, a Subway like a Subway punch card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I don't think he does the Subway. He's a germaphobe.
Yeah, exactly.
He's told us,
Are you surprised by the discretion as far as how this investigation is going, the Mueller investigation?
Robert Mueller's amazing. I mean, this guy, you know, I've been around Washington and was at the Washington Post for 10 years and the New Yorker for many more years than that. And I have never seen an investigation this leak-proof. I mean, really good reporters have tried to find out what's going on inside that investigation. There hasn't been a picture of Robert Mueller.
Yeah, we have to keep using
months,
an old one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And so there he is, and he is the picture of rectitude, white shirt, dark tie, Casio watch. We did a fashion piece on him this week.
I mean, that, nothing will bother Donald Trump more than a guy with a Casio taking him down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Not
all right if it was a $25,000 watch.
It'd be like, yeah. You know, I got to give him credit. He's got a nice watch. I want to talk as well about, you know, there's this weird thing happening where I feel like we're learning reporters' names more because of the reporting they're doing. And the Harvey Weinstein story was another huge story this year. And obviously, there's great work over the New York Times with Jude Cantor Megan Toohey, of course. And then, of course, Ronan Farrow right. for The New Yorker. You guys had tried to write about Harvey in the past.
14, 15 years ago,
yeah.
Ken Auletta, terrific reporter, took a run at Harvey Weinstein and was doing a profile of him. And, you know, the profile was not exactly kind. He came out looking like somebody that's extremely talented, but a bully.
Mm-hmm.
A bully to everyone, people in business, movie stars, and all the rest. And in the course of his reporting, he started to hear at least bits of what we now know to be the case. And we had, I can't say too much about it, we did have a lawyer meeting with Ken and Harvey Weinstein, his brother Bob Weinstein, and their lawyer, David Boyce. And, you know, again, we were trying to extract more information, but really the two women that we knew about had signed non-disclosure agreements. They weren't willing to come forward. And in order for us to publish, we have to know things, not just guess at them. This is not the tabloid press. This is not, you know, TMZ or whatever it is. We have to know. But I can't say that in the intervening years, I haven't been tortured almost by the knowledge that this guy was most likely doing what he turned out to be doing. I mean, it's a terrible thing. But in order to publish, and it's not just a matter of not being sued, but about being right.
Sure.
And doing the right thing. You have to know. And Ronan Farrow came along, and he did an extraordinary job. And he worked beautifully, and he was new to The New Yorker, and he worked with Deirdre Foley Mendelson and David Rode and others and our lawyer and Checkers and really nailed it. And there was the competition between The New Yorker and The New York Times, I thought was the healthiest thing imaginable, because each time the story upped the ante without getting ahead of the facts. And it was really a remarkable thing.
Well, it certainly was remarkable to read. I also want to ask, you are hosting the podcast, The New Yorker Radio Hour. Do you enjoy doing the podcast?
Well, I was, as a kid, I was a kind of, you know, one of those kids who stayed up all night listening to talk radio.
Sure.
I love that stuff. And so I'm pretty much going to quit my day job as the editor of The New Yorker, and just take calls all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that'd be great.
Make that,
you know,
podcast money, yeah. David. Treat yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Podcast money's huge. Huge.
Next time you're going to be having one of those Casios.
Two Casios.
Two Casios. Yeah. One for each wrist. You're going to stick around. We're going to do some cartoons. David Remnick, everybody.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm backstage here with David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, and also Emma Allen from The New Yorker, who is the cartoon editor.
Hi.
How you doing?
So you just finished your interview with Seth. Thank you for coming back.
It's thrilling. It's fun to be here.
And you talked a lot about Jane Mayer's article.
Right.
which you just published about Christopher Steele dossier, on the phone, we talked a little bit about the fact that the perception of Christopher Steele had been one of like questionable credibility, I think at least for me. And her article goes deep into his background and right. who he is as a person.
Well, that's right. And I think, you know, you've seen a number of Republican people in Congress mm-hmm. who are trying to basically kill the credibility of Christopher Steele and thereby lower the credibility of the investigation into the Trump administration and any potential ties to Russia. Who is Christopher Steele? He's somebody who's a British intelligence agent for many years who worked on the ground in Russia and also in London and elsewhere, and is a Russia expert, speaks Russian fluently, has a lot of contacts, and was contracted at first by a Republican financier to do a study of anything about Trump in Russia. Right. Obviously, a not a pro-Trump person employed him. And then when that candidate failed, he was hired by what's called GPS, which is a research firm that's hired by whoever will hire them, in this case, the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And he did a study with sources in Russia on, you know, Trump's personal and business ties to Russia and his attempt to ingratiate himself with the regime there.
Right. I think also there was an interesting quote that Christopher Steele said about being used as a battering ram.
Correct. Look, I think all in all, Trump and his supporters in Congress are trying to divert attention from damning evidence that comes up against him, whether it's on the Senate side or the House side, or even what we know of Robert Mueller's investigation. And, you know, hence all the social media antics of Trump himself
right.
and all the kind of look over there, don't look over there, look over here. It's that kind of stuff. And it would be fodder for comedy were it not so deadly serious.
Right. And then lastly, just on the Russia question.
Well, it's fodder for comedy, too, as we just witnessed on Seth's show, because he went after it for about 20 minutes.
Sure did. You lived in Russia for four years?
4 years with my
and
wife.
And when we talked about...
And many Russians.
Yeah, well. Some other Russians. Yeah. When we talked about on the phone, one of those other people that was living there when you were there was
Christopher
actually...
Christopher Steele.
Right.
Now, if he was my neighbor, I had no idea because, you know, that's not what intelligence agencies do.
Right.
They tend not to knock on your door and ask for a cup of sugar. I was there as a reporter for the Washington Post. My wife was there for the New York Times. And if I met any intelligence agents, and I did, they tended to work for the KGB, not for the CIA.
Oh, wow.
Or MI6. But because that was a period when everything was opening up, and even the KGB was trying to put on this show of liberalization, which obviously was an illusion.
Yes. So one of the things that we love to do when you're here is live New Yorker cartoons.
Okay.
And
it was now the sixth time?
This is the sixth time, yeah.
It's fantastic. I'm going to make it a full-time job.
You should.
I want to.
Emma, how do you choose? Can you walk us through the process? How do you choose the cartoons
for the
magazine?
Well, we receive about 1,000 cartoon submissions a week, 1,000 gag cartoons, and I cull them ruthlessly. As the cartoonists imagine it, I toss them into a fire while cackling and drinking scotch, which is like pretty accurate.
She doesn't. She studies them very hard and works very hard to get the number down. It's true.
It's good that he believes that. And then Colin Stokes, associate cartoon editor, and I winnow it down to about 70, which we bring into a meeting with David. And then we have three baskets that say yes, no, and maybe.
It's a very complex system.
And then, of course, the fireplace to the far right. And then David goes through them and tosses them into one basket or another while I do my sort of music man rapid fire pitch for each of them. Like, this
That's
is really
right.
good.
And
really
Emma
thing,
will make
it?
Noises that seem... We have to understand Emma is relatively new as cartoon editor, but less than a year, right?
Yeah, 10 months. I'm still honing my noises.
But I'm starting to be able to read her grunts and groans and... and her hints, and I think we have a pretty good arrangement going.
Yeah, whenever there's a little thing in a cartoon, like a little koala or like a tiny spoon, I can't help but like make a little like...
Yeah, no, that of course kills the joke right then and there.
Not for me.
And the poor cartoonist's income plunges. It's just a terrible thing.
How does one submit a cartoon? Do they come from people who constantly submit or anyone?
Anybody can do it. We have regulars. We have people that have been submitting cartoons for, George Booth has probably been
submitting cartoons for half a century. Mm-hmm. And there are people in that category. And then there are people, I mean, to Emma's great credit, she's brought in a ton of new cartoonists, particularly people who hadn't thought to submit before, a lot more women, a lot more people of color, and which I really felt strongly about. And Emma has really, in all seriousness, responded to that imperative.
Really, the best way to submit is come up to me on the subway. Cocktail parties are good. If you have like a thick folder for me to take with me, that I like.
You're kidding
that.
Around. I have gotten articles given to me on the subway, on the Stairmaster at the gym, in the locker room, and you know, God knows where else. I mean, I've been at this for a long time. So you're kidding around about the subway. It's happened to me.
And then lastly, we talked about this on the show as well. You have the New Yorker Radio Hour, which is right. also a podcast. What podcasts do you listen to when you're not doing your own?
I don't listen to a ton of them because between work, my daughter, and the desire to watch 42 episodes of Babylon Berlin in an evening. No, really, I have a lot of reading to do. I don't listen to a lot because I'm not in a car. Mm-hmm. And in the subway, I tend to read. But, you know, Terry Gross is probably the best single interviewer of any kind anywhere. Still, she's been at it for a long time. And when she goes in deep with somebody for an hour, and then there's some funny ones that are terrific. I really like Two Dope Queens, and who do a live show every once in a while, right? And they did a TV thing, or is they starting to do a TV thing on HBO? Yeah. So I just, what I'm not good at, I confess, is having things read to me. I was never good with audio books. And even in the rare times that I drive and I have an audio book that's anything more serious than, you know, a thriller, I'll drive the car into a tree.
We don't need that.
No, I don't think anybody needs that.
And then lastly, do you get any suggestions from your staff, whether it's Emma or someone else or family members, about your podcast and what you could do differently or, in their opinion, better?
Of course. I think my mother should have a podcast, and it would be called Make I Make a Suggestion. May I Make a Suggestion? And people would call in and she would say, you know, May I Make a Suggestion? That would be a great podcast. I'm going to bring it to her. I'm going to bring the project to her.
That could be your
WME.
Next. Yeah.
Very soon.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming back and being here. And Emma, thank
Anytime.
You for joining.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
It's win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.